is RSBNB Update, episode 377, recorded Friday, September 7th, 2012. Foreign Affairs. Hello, everybody, and welcome to RSBNB Update. We are here to update you, of course, on RSBNB and everything that RSBNB does, RuneScape, tech, and maybe a bit of gaming, and who knows with us. Maybe we'll even get to politics somewhere along the line, eh, Drecky?
No comment on that one. I'm going to lose.
Well, Drecky, you're here this week.
Yo.
So this week we really have a big piece of content update, actually quite a bit when you parse it all down. Starting off with God Wars Remastered. What do you think? You think this was overdue, or were we fine with what we had before?
You know what? I like it. I like the new changes. The new weapons are quite nice. I like the look of the God Wars now.
Yeah.
Makes them look more active. I think my only pet peeve is I'm still waiting for Regicide to finish up.
We talked about that last week. But they say the first thing that hardened God Wars veterans will notice is the graphical overhaul. Almost every NPC has been reworked to look like the stalwart Eternal Warrior that they are. Also, it's worth noting that Pernix, Virtus, Zarite Bow, Zamorak Spear, Steam Battle Staff have all had visual upgrades, and all four versions of the God Swords now have a new look as well.
So, I like the Bandos one. It looks nice.
Yeah, you know, that's the first thing that stood out to me with these swords is that they're not exactly all the same how they used to be, because you remember the old God Swords had the same blade. The hilt was just a little bit different.
Yeah, but you would never see it anyway.
Yeah. So I'm wondering how this works for replacing the blade, because, you know, you still get the shards to make the blade, and then you have to attach a hilt to it, of course. And with them all looking a bit differently, that, you know, it makes nice for a different, or it's different to have a nice end product like that, but there's just a little bit of a disconnect, you know, between how you get from the little pieces all the way to the actual finished blade, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, so Bandos one looks just like how you would picture him to be, someone who's basically brute force. So the sword itself looks like something that your only goal is to just, you know, hack through somebody.
Yeah.
There's no finesse. It's just all nothing but hacking.
I can't see the difference. Which one is Ceridoman and which one is Armadale?
Let me see. I think the... Let me see. Ceridoman. Ceridoman's the one who's a little more straight.
Okay. Then the other... So, then the Armadale one's kind of like a blade, I guess. Well, of course they're all blades.
So it's... Basically, from left to right, it's the Ceridoman blade, Armadale blade, Bandos blade, and Zamorak. The red one is Zamorak.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Also, the graphics in the area have been improved as well. It's also, might as well mention it now, that when they were doing this, they put out a developer blog on doing a graphical rework of an area. And basically, they go through all the process here, starting with choosing which environment update, and then a performance check is always made before they begin the kind of project, so they can compare the before and after frame rates and map load times. We know we had some issues with that in Taverly. But no issues like that here in God Wars, actually. God Wars, the frame rate is pretty, pretty good down there, mm-hmm. with all the action going on.
I think that's kind of the reason why they did it in Taverly first, because, you know, Taverly is, if you really think about it, there's only three things we go there for, is to do the quest and head toward Berthrop.
Yeah.
And so,
and the farming patch now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that thing actually works.
Yeah, the farming patch. The tree patch, I mean, because that's right in Taproot.
Oh, okay.
But
I thought you meant the tutorial one where you had to grow potatoes.
No. But the second stage is they remove all the old assets and remap the area with simple placeholders, so essentially like cardboard boxes, and that creates a blocking plan for all the NPCs in the area. Mm-hmm. And then after that, they add the new asset models, put them in the environment, and replace the placeholder objects. Then they do it in stages to build it up gradually and resolve any potential problems. Key features first, and then wall second, ground decor third, until everything is in place. And then after that is all the finishing touches. That's like lighting, cosmetic details, ice, rubble, broken weapons.
We should have bought some God Sword, Shane. We could have made some good money.
Well, you know, I don't know about that, because you remember in the combat beta, the special attacks have gone away, so we don't exactly know what's going to be happening with the God Swords once the combat beta has been released. So even though they might be experiencing a little rise right here, I don't exactly know if it's a good idea to invest in, say, a Ceridolan God Sword right now. Well,
I was just thinking we should have bought it before and then just flip it right now, because Bando's God Sword went up all to almost 1 mil extra.
Yeah, Ceridolan went up about 7 mil or so. But, I mean, who knows what's going to happen when the combat beta ships. So this could just be a temporary bump. I don't know. Do you have any comments on the graphics in the area, or...?
I got nothing. I mean, I kind of liked some of the graphics. I don't have much complaint over it.
Okay,
I like the new swords.
Yeah, the swords are probably one of my favorites as well. But another thing I really like about what they did here is the fact that it's not using the same textures and methods that they would have used outside in the real world. For example, like the water in the God Wars dungeon is different than the water at the surface, because it's a glacial water. So that makes sense. And, you know, I think that this is just signaling that the OpenGL/DirectX water that we see for the seas, is probably going to go away at some point and be replaced with a different kind of water.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've always been a fan of what they did with water, and it flows nicely, and there's a waterfall and everything. So, I mean, if you haven't gone down there, head on down there and just have a look if you're not going to kill anything or like that. And even the bosses themselves, those look pretty good too. They of course have all been redone with this.
We should do an RSBNB event when this thing kind of blows over.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking the same thing too, because everybody and their four sons are down there, you know. So.
Four sons, God.
Well, yeah. Well, it's just best to wait until, you're right, the entire thing blows over, but definitely might be something to do in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So moving on from this, there's some new equipment that was released, which is interesting at this stage. I think this is priming the game for the combat beta release. I think there was something like about 20 new items released or something like that for each of the bosses, of course. For example, Ceridolan got a bunch of amulets, all offering boosts to either melee, ranged, or magic attack values. That's the Ceridolan's Hiss, Murmur, and Whisper. So, it's nice to see that they're using the next base for something more than just magical little amulets that offer a bit of a boost. Also, from this, Zamorak got quite a few items. Drops from the Zamorak boss now include items from the subjugation set, including the hood, garb, boots, gloves, gown, and ward. Now, you're probably wondering what all of these do. It looks as though the Zamorak set is a relatively I don't know. I'm not sure how to describe the subjugation set. Because, I mean, the shield slot only has 39, 28, plus 44 values for their defensive settings. So, I mean, it's not like they're that great. Same with the garb of subjugation. But, of course, they've got a bit of damage absorption, too. So... Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's it's kind of like a battle mage outfit.
Yeah, I guess that would be the best way of describing it, because they do have a magic defense and magic attack bonus, and... But...
So, I think these new armors basically getting ready for combat beta, where people are going to, you know... I still can't figure out how to do this stupid thing, but...
Well, we need to sit down and do that. Next week or something before this thing goes live.
Like, basically what we know, what they said before during the whole behind the scenes thing when we were showing it off was the fact that they wanted to have people to do, you know, range and melee, or melee and mage. So I think they're trying to get people to start doing this and get some of the gear out right now.
So you're right that the Zamorak subjugation set is a battle mage kind of set.
So, you know, what I would say is basically for now, just wait till, you know, I don't know, the price will drop or not.
Price will drop on those. Do you have any idea how many people do those main four bosses? Lots.
Well, you wait till it drops to, I guess, when a quote-unquote somewhat decent, and then buy a couple, and then when beta finally officially rolls out, you can start flip them really quick.
Hopefully.
And I bet lots of people see that anyway, but we'll just see what happens.
Yeah. So I mentioned already that Sarah Doman has amulets for the next slot, which is good that I'll give an offensive bonus to your chosen combat stat. I could see those being useful around the community and everything like that.
Mm-hmm. Actually, one other little thing is when we were in the combat beta, you know how they redid the poison thing with weapons?
Right.
So, what I also think will happen is that there might be a small price increase for weapon poisons, but I don't think it'll cover the cost to make it anyway. Basically, the whole thing is that in the combat beta, you're supposed to drink the poison. That's supposed to affect your weapon somehow. So you're bleeding poison through your pores in your hand, which goes onto the blade, which causes poison to whichever you're fighting.
Yeah. So Bando's also got armor as well with this, adding on to the previous Bando set, including the gloves, the war shield, and the helmet. The war shield is, or I guess the entire Bando set, you can describe as entirely focused on melee with ranged defense and a bit of a magic weakness, because it's got pretty high... melee defensive values. So that's what the Bando set is for. Then if you head on over to the Armadil, Kriara's drops, we see that Kriara has had the Armadil boots, gloves, buckler, and crossbow added.
There's a bank in the God Wars dungeon now, apparently.
Well, that's always been there for Nex.
Oh, for Nex, okay.
Yeah. So Armadil's boots give a slight bonus to all defensive combat stats, offensive ranged boost. Armadil gloves give, once again, the same kind of defensive boost across the board with a boost to range defense and a decrease in magic offense as well. So then same with the buckler.
Mm-hmm.
So... I mean, I think of the ones that'll be most useful are probably the Armadil and Zamorak set, because, I mean, we already have enough melee-based items, you know, to defend.
They'll probably release more melee set in the future anyway. One thing I'm kind of curious, though, is that, you know, I'm wondering if they'll start having items drop from other monsters as well.
You know, I don't know about that.
I mean, like, come from other mini bosses, not, you know, any run of the mill.
The Armadale crossbow is 16 mil currently.
You know, the thing is that if you look at it right now, you know, God War dungeon armor, they're, you know, for high level people. So basically, there's is a giant gap between, you know, if they're going for the battle mage outfits or, you know, ranger melee outfit type of thing. There's nothing in between. You have to either level really fast in order to use those and, you know, get enough money. So what I'm thinking is they may start either you can smith some of these, or you have some monsters, you know, lower level, mid level monster that will drop some gear, battle mage gear type of thing.
Yeah, they're going to have to add more battle mage gear if that's the direction they want to push people in. But just a quick stat here on the Armadale crossbow. A ranged attack of +105.
Isn't the Chaotic Longbow crossbow still better, or is that
I'm not sure on that. Let me just check quickly here. But I know that having a ranged crossbow that you can get that's relatively easy to acquire would be a good thing. 105, that puts it... Yeah, you're right. The Chaotic is 120. So, I mean, it's not as good, but you don't have to spend as much time getting it, right?
Mm-hmm. And you don't have to pay to recharge it every once in a while. So, it's a good investment.
And, you know, there's really not much else in terms of crossbow. You could get a maple or magic longbow that's sighted, but, I mean, well, I guess it's going to change in the combat beta, but who's going to use bow and arrow now, right?
I don't think anybody really uses bow and arrow anymore. Everybody just uses crossbows because you can carry a shield with you.
Yeah, so if you're going pure ranged, once the combat beta comes out, you'll definitely want to be using the bows. But we've talked about all this before. One more interesting thing before we head off into some general fixes from the God Wars update this week is that Nex got some new armor as well, but it's not tradable.
Right.
So, I mean, isn't that a little odd, or do you think they took their lessons with the Torv Avertis and Pernix set and just said, you know, we've done this before, we don't need another 200 mil piece of armor in the game, you know, so.
Well, I think they will be tradable maybe in the future. I think they're just doing this to see what is going to happen because, you know, boots and gloves are not tradable. I mean, getting it your own doesn't mean so much.
Yeah, the Torva boots just have plus 22, 23, 24 defensive bonuses and not much for an attack bonus.
They're gloves as well.
They're minor, I guess. I guess that's the point behind this. But the other ones are as well. So maybe they thought it would like devalue the Torva and Pernix set that already exists, but I don't know.
Okay. Alrighty.
So,
but you know the whole thing is behind that is you know, they're just boots and gloves. I don't think people are going to go out of their way to try and farm boots and gloves just to, you know, get the extra 5 or 10 points or so.
Yeah.
I think they'll become tradable in the future. I think they're just doing this just to, you know, maybe delay it or something.
Mm-hmm. So, let's talk about some other little fixes made to the God Wars. Lore fans, so now you get these tombs like you get in Dungeoneering. Gives you a bit of a back history of God Wars, so that's nice. Kirill, two sets of Ors, I know you can't say that. Attack damage is now split across players in close vicinity to each other. So, I guess that means it's kind of like a splash attack then?
Mm-hmm.
Also, Nex is tougher than ever with improved pathfinding and the ability to reflect ranged damage to her attackers. That's nice, I think, because you know the people who fight Nex and stuff have it down to science, and always nice to throw a wrench into something that's been known for quite a while. So. And there's no longer any need to bring any rope or mithril grapples. I think that's the best part of the God Wars update here.
Well, for the next thing?
Yeah.
To get to next?
No, to get into the God Wars or to get across the bridge to Armadale, you know?
Oh, okay. I never...
Yeah, you don't even
went down there.
What? You never went down there to fight Armadale?
No.
Wow. Okay.
I only went down there to usually just fight the either very rarely I would fight Bandos just because, you know, like an RSB event type of thing, or I go down there to farm the to do Slayer for what is it, spirit people,
spiritual mages.
There you go.
Okay. So that's the God Wars update. I think it's a good update. And you know, there's lots of people out there who have been feeling that there haven't been any real content updates recently, and I think it's safe to say that this is a content update that everybody can be happy about, I hope.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens later on, so let's move on to the next topic.
Tweaks and fixes.
Yeah, not too many fixes again this week.
Significant software update from Oracle to Java. JAGX ensures that its games are compatible with all updates of this nature and will always make any changes necessary to ensure that they operate as they should. We do encourage you all to install Java updates as soon as they become available.
And I actually think this actually caused them to update their client. Either that or it's the Guardian thing.
Yeah, because, I heard that.
Because on my Yaris client, it told me I had to update it, re-download the program and reinstall it.
If this is Java 7 support. I don't have any systems with Java 7 installed, so it'd be interesting to see if they support that now.
Beats me. I don't speak nerd.
The entire human base model has been updated to use the same version as the Evolution of Combat beta. That's the one with the fingers and stuff. So it's always nice to see updates to the player kit because, I mean, wasn't even 2 years ago we just had little slits for our eyes, so now we actually got noses, mouths, and actually fingers. So I'm happy about that. other things from the release notes, not much I want to mention aside from the fact that swinging to a rock on Baxtorian Falls is now using a non-broken animation that's been broken for quite some time. Karamja Gloves 4 now give double damage against wild dogs all over the Brimhaven dungeon. Any thoughts on that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not really. I mean, I don't think maybe we'll go down there to train on the dogs. I mean, if you do, I think there are a couple other locations that are better. Maybe you want to train on the little dogs, but you know. If you're trading on it, by all means, you know, have fun. Kill something.
And this is a bit of an absurd one. Typing a double slash followed by lots of characters in a private message no longer causes disconnection.
I think it's to try and fight off all those spammers in the Grand Exchange. That, you know, they threw in a bug.
Yeah, maybe. But who would type double slash followed by lots of characters? I don't know.
Well, double slash is... Oh, wait, that's for... no, that's for a clan chat. I mean, double slashing is for a clan chat. So
oh,
I'm
really?
Guessing. Mm-hmm.
No, I abandoned the slashes. I just use slash P, slash F, slash C now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, double slash is for clan citadel... I'm talking, so I'm guessing as soon as someone typed in private press tab for private messaging and had those two on because they were chatting with the clan and just messed up.
Yeah.
Oh, that's my guess.
All right. So let's move on to something that's was supposed to be a while in coming. JAG, the JAGX account guardian, not the judge advocate general. Bit of a note, we did have a question after on from Bonsai. I'm going to answer half of it now and half of it later because the second part of your question I plan to talk about already. So we're answering the second part of your question in this. So essentially what JAGX Account Guardian is JAGX's attempt to help keep your account safe. Did you set this up?
No.
Okay. Is there any reason why you did not set it up?
Because I have two computers that I play RS in, and quite frankly, if someone does get into my account, they have figured out their very complex password, and it's probably, like you would say, it was your fault.
Thank you for that. but, you know, you can set it easily up on multiple computers, which I think is good. Essentially, what happens is you log in, and you'll be asked to set up Jake's account guardian if you want. You'll see a little thing next to where it shows your messages and membership status and whatnot. So what you want to do is click that and set it up if you're interested in this. And then this is where it kind of got me. First, it does the usual thing where it asks you to set up some security questions, which is, okay, we're using recovery questions for this rather than something else. Now, recovery questions are good, but the problem with recovery questions is that people might not exactly remember their recovery questions.
Or they don't care for it and just put in, you know, 11123 or just press a whole bunch of buttons on their laptop.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, like, the recovery questions have their own place, and in my view, it kind of devalues the idea of multi-factor authentication by combining authenticating and your recovery questions. Because the way it works, you enter like five questions and you're asked three of them whenever you want to add a new computer, which is okay. But the thing is, recovery questions can be social engineered and they don't have the ability to enter your own question in. It's just a bunch of questions that are default. And if somebody knew enough about you and you answer them truthfully, the fact is that somebody could indeed get this information and authorize an account for you. Granted, it's one more hoop that you need to step through, but it's not the ideal way of doing it, in my view.
So you don't like it?
I like it, but I just think that using recovery questions is the wrong thing to do. they could have done this in a very simple way that would have, I think, added a bit more security onto it, kind of the same way that Steam does. You know, the best thing would have been for them to force everybody to validate an email address with their RuneScape account. And then what you do after that, after you have that validation by clicking on a link or something like that, or even entering your answers to previously set recovery questions and your password, that would be one hoop to get through. So you validate your email account with JAG, and then what the better course of action would have been just to email you a code, like a 5-digit code that you enter on the computer whenever you want to authenticate it. And that's the same way that Steam Guard works.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you go to a new browser computer and you enter that in.
It's also the same how Guild Wars 2 works the same way. If they have a new little thing where if you get into the game and an IP address that's very unfamiliar, like, you know, you usually go on either one or two, and it becomes very unfamiliar, what they'll do is they'll send you an email, hey, are you trying to get into the game right now? If so, here's the code, put it into the game, and then we'll let you in, and they'll remember the IP address. This was also a giant problem for some of people that play it who lived in Germany, because apparently their ISPs, every once in a while, they like to just scramble the IP address of you. So many people then ended up having to continuously go into their email to play in the game. So that was a little pet peeve for some people.
Yeah, so I mean, the code through email would have been one way to do it. It would have been a sending it through SMS would have been another way, but I don't know if Jagex wants to be sending out massive SMS messages. Another way, as pointed out by Bonsai in his question, the first part, is that they should have maybe used something like Blizzard's Authenticator, and they made iPhone applications before, so why not do that? So, I mean, they could have done that as an alternative to the email code, or another option that would have been free to do with an app that already exists is to use the Google Authenticator application for iOS and Android. Because the way that works, there's actually an API behind that, and you can just hook into that and use that for multi-factor authentication. That's what Dropbox uses, and you can use that for your Google account too if you want. So, okay. I mean, would have been better if they would have done something like true one-factor auth, or two-factor auth, I mean. But I'm going to accept the burden of entering some security questions just to block somebody from accessing an account, just because it's one more hoop that people need to step through. So.
Cool.
I like Jag.
You like Jag. Okay.
All right. Now comes the Squeal of Fortune Alchemist Amulet.
You know, there seems to be a Squeal update almost every single week.
Yeah, and you know, I mentioned to you that our new policy is going to be to ignore these because I'm tired of defending this because I support it and we've been defending this since February. So, I mean, unless it's a big update like this one, we're just going to ignore them in the future. But from midnight GMT Friday, September 7th, till 23:59 on Monday, September 10th, Alchemist Amulet Fragments can be won in common slots on Squeal. Using just one will grant you 10,000 coins and a cosmetic amulet. Each additional fragment you use will double this value up to 10 per amulet. So if you do the math, that leads to roughly 5.1 million coins that you could get over the weekend if you get 10 of these fragments.
Which, let's see, so about what, 3 days? 4 days? Yeah, four days. Four, if you remember, you got 4 spins, so that's 16 spins, so you have, you know, 10 out of 6 chance. 10 out of 16.
You know, I like the idea of, I like the idea of free money. Now, let's assume 10 people do this. That's an extra 51 million coming into the economy. Let's expand that again to 100 people. That's 500 million coming in. 1,000? You get the idea. This thing grows quite quick. And with as many people playing RuneScape as there are and spinning on Squeal of Fortune, I just am not... I'm not entirely sure what effect this will have on the economy and if we need this much GP flowing into it, you know? I just don't know if that's the right thing to be doing at this stage.
No, man, they're bailing out the economy.
Well, as if it needs to be bailed out. There's already enough GP floating around. They better be coming out with a money sink soon.
Not gonna happen.
I mean, we need a big update to construction or something to get people to train it again and invest like hundreds of millions in it. You remember how much people were investing when construction came out?
Yes, and then we had the Valadorian massacre soon after, and that just basically ruined it.
On 6606, nonetheless. But I mean, I like the idea of free GP, but I just can't get behind this one. Like, it'd be interesting to see how much money goes into the economy from high alking and this kind of stuff in general. Because I'm just trying to think as to where the money goes, and I don't see any money going out of the economy. Only way I see it going out is construction and summoning, really. So, like, I don't see any.
Yeah. And, you know, the other problem is, you know, once you get 99 Slayer or Construction, you don't really touch that skill anymore.
Exactly. So, I mean, there's always going to be people getting it, but it just seems like it's too much. So, anyways, let's talk about Behind the Scenes September now.
Ooh, Behind the Scenes. Okay.
So, one of the first things they mention here is the challenge system. So, they say there comes a time when we're just not sure what content we should play next, whether we're a new player or a player with so many things to choose from or a high-level veteran with many goals and unfinished targets. It's going to be based around the levels people have. It can be about anything, training skills, playing mini-games, participating in combat. Completing them will give you extra XP and rewards to help you reach those levels. And then each day another challenge will be added to your list, so you'll always have something interesting to do when you log in. And they say that with this, they're reworking the quest list and or quest journal and task list tabs to produce the notice board. So that should be interesting. What do you think?
I don't have a clue.
Okay. So you like? I know for me, I'd be really interested in having this because I know there's lots of times when I'm not sure what I should be doing in game, and if this thing could actually provide a meaningful pointer as to what I should do, I'd welcome that.
Okay.
I'd welcome that entirely. So I'll be looking forward to that one. Also, two new quests, two novice quests, one free, one members. Deal with Ozan and Alcard. There's going to be hidden content, of course, for players with higher stats. Basic rewards will be low-level players, a new area, titles, and equipment available.
You think there'll be an Alcard task thing for you to do now?
You know, maybe given the emphasis on the challenge system, who knows? Who knows? But new equipment. Maybe we'll see some more of the hybrid armor coming out with this. But we'll save that for when it comes out. But they mentioned that a bot update was coming, and it will be here this month. Botany Bay.
Yay. I think this already starting to have a little bit of an effect.
Well,
whatever they're doing, because I was walking, I was in a rock, and I didn't see that many bots mining rune essence. You know, I went toward there, I was like, this is odd. And then, you know, I usually go down, like, whenever I'm in Verat, I go down there just to say, like, okay, who do I believe is, who am I, like, 99.99% sure is a bot, because, you know, how their name's basically just nothing but characters and numbers. And I was looking through, I was like, well, there's one, and it's like, wait, that's it? And then I look at the map, and it's like, there's no white dots running back and forth.
Mm-hmm. But so, this is an entirely different system, too. In the behind-the-scenes video for this, they show that there's going to be giant kind of like tentacles pointing down at who the system thinks is a bot, and then there'll be temp banned, and then temp banned again, and then or longer ban, and then permanent ban. So essentially what's happening with this is then once they get to the permanent stage, they'll be sent to Botany Bay. For those of you who don't know, it's a penal colony in Australia. It's also got a bit of a Star Trek reference, too. For those of you interested in that, watch the original series episode entitled Space Seed and the movie Wrath of Khan.
Khan!
Yes. You know, it would prove an interesting quest later on to have a kind of a Wrath of something or other emulating Star Trek 2, don't you think?
I'm still waiting for my wiki.
I mean, essentially what happened was in the late 90s, Earth exiled these genetically engineered humans on a early spaceship called the SS Botany Bay, hence being exiled. Then Kirk and his crew later found them and resettled them to a planet, and then they stumbled on the planet later and they took back a ship and almost destroyed the Enterprise. So let's just not hope that happens with the bots one day.
If you also think about it, Shane, they did kind of throw him in the desert and said, "Here, fend for yourself."
But remember, that was the thing. It wasn't a desert when they got there. The star exploded after, causing the problems for that planet. So,
yeah, that's when you say, "Mayday, mayday, distress! We need help."
So,
they're genetically engineered. I'm sure they can figure out how to go all MacGyver and to make a radio out of a toothbrush.
Yeah, so back to this. We just have to hope that the bots won't escape Botany Bay, you know? And I'm hoping that this will be a smart enough system that they'll actually be able to keep on top of the bots this time. Like we know last year, they wiped them out and then they came back around March or so. And let's just hope that this system is smart enough to keep them at Botany Bay.
Okay, well, let's just take a look at the RS forum, see if there's anything related to bot stuff. No.
Oh, and it's also worth noting that for those of you who voting and choosing the account ending punishments, you'll get new cosmetic rewards, including a flaming pitchfork emote.
For what?
For participating in Botany Bay festivities.
Mm.
So anything on the bots?
Yeah, nothing. Just talk about the live stream that's about to happen on Sunday.
Yeah, so, make sure you tune into that. That's going to be MMG and Daniel Clough, I think, if I remember correctly.
Whoa.
I'm sorry.
CEO, let's see, is going to be... Oh, just really quick so everybody remembers... Shane, is that you?
Yeah, yes, I'm sorry.
Okay. It's going to be on Sun... So, take two. The live stream event is going to be with the CEO and the Vice President. It will be on Sunday, the 16th of September at 9 p.m. British Standard Time. It will be a battle against the bots hosted by Mark Gerhard and Daniel Clough.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you're a bot fan, have a listen, and... I think last week they completely messed up, didn't they?
Yeah, they had some major technical issues. So
I'm wondering if they'll try and I don't know how they do.
Well, they got it worked out, and they did one on Monday, but I didn't really watch it because it wasn't the one I wanted to pay attention to. The one I wanted to pay attention to was this week's.
We should record it. Ask them if we can record it and post it on YouTube.
Well, no, it shows up on YouTube because they're using YouTube to stream it.
Oh yeah. Okay, good to know. Oh, good. Yeah. And then maybe I can plug it into my car radio and listen to it through my phone.
If you have enough bandwidth for that.
I got unlimited.
Oh, this weekend is Squeal of Fortune and micropayments. Oh. Next week is Bots.
Oh, they moved it?
Yeah.
Oh, right, because last week didn't work. Okay. Sorry about that. Was that what you were looking for?
Yes.
You know, Picard just did a face palm with you doing that.
Oh, well. So anybody who is wanting to know what that is, just go watch Star Trek 2.
Or just Google evil orgasm.
What? I don't know. Postbag from the Hedge is out. We're not going to read those to you. You guys can read that on your own time. So, Postbag 47. I believe that's it for RS updates this week. Anything else that you want to, before we move on to questions?
Nah.
Alrighty. Alright, the first one is an audio question from Earth. Oh, and Trekkie, he did say to... he forgot to append your favorite stab, stab, stab after this.
Dearest Shane and Trekkie, what did you think of the Republican and Democratic conventions? Also, do you think that trolling is not always a force of bad, but can also be used as a force for good? Satirical as always, love, Earth.
So the RNC and DNC. Any thoughts?
Well, I didn't watch the whole thing, but, you know, just watching what I could, I think Michelle Obama gave better speech than Romney's wife.
Yeah,
I think she had a little bit more energy.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. But, you know, First Lady has been, of course, in the spotlight longer than Ann Romney has been for this. I mean, after 4 years, I'm sure Ann Romney would give such a speech as well.
But the Clint Eastwood thing,
I love that. I know dad loved that too.
Why? Because he was talking to an invisible man.
Yeah, we were laughing through the entire thing.
You know, like I said to you last week, Shane, when you and I were kind of looking over it, you do remember I told you before that. A couple months ago during the Super Bowl when Clint Eastwood did a commercial for, you know, thing Chevy, And then suddenly the Republicans were basically ripping at Clint Eastwood because it was a quote-unquote pro-Obama commercial during the Super Bowl. And now I'm just thinking to myself, all right, you, a couple months ago, you hated Clint Eastwood because he made a commercial that was quote-unquote pro-Obama. Now you're inviting him to speak at the Republican convention and you're all praising him now. That's either very flip-flopping or hypocritical.
I don't know. I think the whole Chevy thing was a bit of a thing put together by pundits. I mean, I don't think there's anything that says that Chevy was a Obama-sponsored company, or I don't know what the whole story with was.
It was basically just a commercial. You know, Chevy just made a commercial for the Super Bowl, and they just invited Clint Eastwood
and
to narrate
it. What's wrong with that? I mean, Clint Eastwood is an iconic voice.
I didn't say it was anything bad. I was just saying that, you know, for like a week or so, they just kept saying that it was a pro-Obama, and then Clint Eastwood is not a Republican. And I was like, it's a freaking commercial.
Yeah.
And then a month or two ago, there was a commercial running around that was, you know, it was a Democratic commercial that was basically created by an independent group. And suddenly there were just people up in arms because, you know, the whole commercial, I can't find it anymore. I can't remember what it was, but basically the whole thing was they were basically bashing Romney and the Republican Party, and the people were saying, like, you know, this proves that Obama is an, you know, jerk and all everything else. But then it was like Obama had nothing to do with that commercial.
Yeah,
it would be like me ripping at a Republican commercial that Mitt Romney didn't have anything to do with.
Yep.
You know, it's okay. Come on, people. There's a reason people say use your head.
Okay, back to the conventions now. Go ahead.
I don't know. I didn't watch too much of it. I basically just went through. I listened to part of Bill Clinton's speech, and then all of a sudden there was internet meme with him now, so I was like, oh, this is going to be interesting.
You know, I think the Bill Clinton's speech was good. I think he'd still have some shelf life if he wanted to be president again, if he could. I think he would do a better job than Obama, and I think his speech was probably better than anything Obama's ever given. I also think that that Biden, well, he probably wouldn't be the best choice for president. I think he had a good speech as well. Obama, I don't know. It just felt like another State of the Union address, kind of, from him.
Mm-hmm.
But as for the Republican side, I think that I think the part I liked the most about theirs, aside from the chair discussion, was Paul Ryan's speech. I like that guy.
I don't.
I do.
Yes, I know you do. He likes slashers.
So, I mean, the only other thing about this is it seemed as though the method of the Democrat, they were all on the same kind of message, whereas the Republican messages were kind of all over the place, and they weren't exactly focusing on a central point that is getting Romney elected. They were all focusing on different points of policy, which is fine, but I think that it should be on just marketing the guy towards the general public, because I think that's a narrow wedge there that you have to win over to win if you plan on doing that, because of just the way that your system works. So, anyways.
Okay, so now second part of his question, trolling, can it be used for a force of good?
I honestly don't believe that. The point of a troll is to kind of make someone angry, and I hope that sometimes during StarCraft I do end up doing that by making the game extend a bit longer. The enemy team, of course. So,
Yes.
I don't see how it could be used as a force of good, and, you know, we do have a rule, and we banned people who did that before. I'm not going to name any names, but I'm sure everybody can think of people in the past who have went away by this same method.
Mm. Yeah, as for me, I would just say 99.999999 to infinity are trolling is bad. You'll have that, you know, 0.0 infinity 1% that, you know, is basically making fun of that person who is a complete jerk anyway. You know, mostly it's the one to try to speak Ebonic.
Okay.
All right. So,
anything else? What?
Earth, I am going to stab you with a jackhammer.
Yeah, because, you know, he did append that he wanted you to say stab, stab, stab.
I'll just get a jackhammer and make it go through the earth. I'm sure I'll strike oil sooner or later.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good. If you do that, let me know and we'll go into business together.
No, I'm not hiring you. Why? I'll hire Mike, not you.
Why? I'm honest.
No.
Alrighty, this next one is from Parnassius, and thank you for including the pronunciation key there. Thanks for the trophy last week. During the fishing skill of the month, made me try out fish flingers for the first time. Aside from the good XP for each game, between 18 and 20k, I earned the fishing outfit, which was giving me an extra 9.5 XP bonus per rocktail, as well as a tackle box, which holds an additional 12 fish. I know barbarian fishing is quicker, but I like to earn something that will be of value to me later in game when I skill. Playing the distraction and diversion got me thinking about other minigames in RuneScape and the bonuses you can get from them. Which ones do you play, or if you don't play them, which ones do you think are worthwhile and which ones should be left alone? Thanks for answering this. Happy RuneScaping. Okay, we're at a point in the game where there's so many distractions and diversions, it's hard to keep track of them. So which one's your favorite? Let's just tackle it this way and mention a few of our favorites.
My favorite ones are the Penguin, although I haven't used it very much. But one I use almost every single week is the Circus.
Okay.
I go to Circus almost every week.
That one is good for agility, ranged, and magic.
They threw in thieving too, but thieving's not that great.
Right.
The problem that I have with the thieving one is you can use up to 10 abilities, but they only give you 5. And unless I'm missing something, you end up redoing them again, and you don't get XP for doing it again. So it's kind of, you just spam all 5, and then spam whatever you want, because nothing's going to change.
Yeah, another thing I like from the Circus is the Ringmaster outfit that you get. That's a nice outfit.
I don't care for that one.
Evil Tree is another one that if I see one, I'll do, because it has the ability to give you woodcutting XP and maybe some farming seeds.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I let you finish first.
I was just going to say, I do Penguin Hide and Seek as well.
Mm. The one I kind of like is, what's that one called? The fire making one, where every once in a while you get a fire spirit that will give you something.
Okay.
So when you may start doing the bomb. Fire spirit, apparently. Okay. I want to start doing the. Well, I don't have my fireman. I want to start doing the whole fire training thing in that what was that last quest that came out a couple months ago, that you and I were complaining the level 4 was too high.
Oh, I forget the name.
What was it? Let it burn. All fired up. There we go.
No, all fired up. Was it? You sure?
Yeah, I'll fire it up. Let me see. No, that wasn't it.
Yeah, that was the novice one.
But you know which one I was talking about.
Yeah,
I do. Go back there and do it. The one that, let's see, I like the fish flinger one, but
okay.
You know, the thing is, I have 99 fishing already. I don't really go down there unless I'm going for rocktails, and they just added that one recently, so I haven't really had any reason to go down catch rocktails because I have what I want. I have what I need. Other one I really enjoy is the agility one. Every once in a while, if I'm training agility, I talk to that guy who would give me a little extra agility.
Oh, yeah. That
agility
one was
training.
I wish that was there when I got 99 agility.
So, it's nice to
Tears
have.
Of Guthix. That's always one that I like doing as well.
Tears of Guthix got me 50 Dungeoneering.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
So I always tell people, if you're low level, just do that one, because that one really saves you a lot of time. It got me up to 70 construction.
Yep.
Because construction was my lowest, you know, when it first came out, it was my lowest skill. And I basically just went there every single freaking week just to get the tiers and get it leveled up. And it wasn't until that it started conflicting with the runecrafting that it started going everywhere else.
Another one that you should do for a bit of a good chunk of free XP is the Troll Invasion.
I haven't really done that one too much.
Yeah, that one's really good XP. You can use it on whatever skill you want. You can either do combat-based or skilling-based. You get a bit more XP from the combat method, but I just prefer doing the skilling method. So it's a nice way to round off a skill if you're getting close.
I just never had any reason to go there. Like, I know it's there. I just, like, I don't feel like going all the time. I use jack-of-all-trades aura every once in a while. I don't do that every single day because I usually forget.
Right. Apparently, Jagex classes the treasure trails as a distraction and diversion.
Yeah, it does. They're considered that, but usually the stuff I get is junk, so.
Okay. Two more things on this. Shooting Star. You guys will remember from the focus with Uncle Dano that Shooting Star is really good for mining XP if you can come across one, and then after that, head off to the Living Rock Caverns. So that's good. Can we call the kingdom management at Miscellanea distraction and diversion?
I don't think it's considered a distraction. I just think it's considered running a freaking kingdom. But yeah, you really it's basically an investment firm.
Yeah, and you get lots of good resources from that. So mm-hmm. I would highly recommend doing that as well.
Yeah, it actually makes you money, which is actually a good thing, especially if you did all the quests on the way up.
Familiarization, I'm not too fond of that one. Same with Champion's Challenge. I've never even got one of those scrolls. Have you?
Champion, I did, but then like it took me so long just to get the Goblin one. I'm not doing it ever again. The one I got the second time was just pure luck. And that was for a lesser demon that I just randomly killed. Like, I got one? Really? And they have the other one, which is the Court Summon one, which I don't care for because I already got 99 attack and defense.
So,
by all means, if you like it, go for it. If you don't, I have 99 already, so I don't really need it.
Yeah. All right.
If you really look at it, like, RS is really giving you, there's a lot of stuff you can do just to get free experience. You just got to do them. And, you know, there's people who actually make it a habit of getting every single daily thing, and they get tons of experience. But the thing is,
There's also Bork and the Skeletal Horror.
Bork. Yes, Bork. But, you know, but the whole daily thing is that you can do those and get, like, lots and lots of free stuff and make, you know, decent cash and everything else, but the thing I have with it is that, well, if you're doing this just to do it, then you're not really playing the game. You're making a game and doing a chore.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I don't want to do. So, I mean, that's why if I just see penguins, like at this point, I've got all the skills to where I want them. I will at the end of the month with that little 700,000 XP lap that's coming for Dungeoneering. So at this point, the penguins is just penguins whenever I see them.
I just make it a habit getting the polar bear every week.
Oh yeah, that as well. That's good.
So I just go out to see figure out where the polar bear is, and just go there. And if I happen to, and I check a look at the list. If it's in an area that's like really closed up, I may go. But if it's one of those things where like, oh, it's somewhere in the southern desert, it's like, oh, forget it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a good discussion on distractions and diversions. Not to get distracted with that, but I think we should move on to the next question.
I'm sure Dano uses every single one he can.
Okay, you can read the next one.
Okay, so this is from Lord Rickles. Howdy, host. Time to jump start Shane into the political mode. That's a little early. It's been forever since we had a good discussion on politics. I'll, however, keep it north of the Maple Leaf border on this one. What are your thoughts after the recent election of Pauline Marceau to
Marois
to Quebec's premier designate. Do you think there will be any real shakeup, or is she the whole separationist party just a French and enveloping group? I mean, I don't think it'd be any real loss to let the French do their own thing. So, and bonus question, any plans for a live podcast anytime soon? I really like to see this for every show, but maybe it'll be nice to do it when the Evolution Combat comes out into the full game. Just a thought. Thank you, and much love from your loyal listener, Lord Pickles. Wait, why did I say Pickles?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't change that. That's just what I copied in. But, okay.
Didn't you tell me there was a shooting after she was
elected? Yeah, there was. Pauline Marois was at her victory speech in, I think, Montreal, if I remember correctly. And outside, somebody, a 50-plus-year-old, shot someone, and the bullet went through him, killed them, and hit someone else. And apparently she was the target, so you can call it an assassination attempt. And I don't know if he was mentally stable or not, but he said something like, the English are rising because of the Parti Québécois victory. So Pauline Marois is the leader of the Parti Québécois, but regarding her election, there won't be any shakeup, at least not yet, unless she forms some kind of coalition with Quebec Solidaire, which I don't think she will, because she doesn't have a majority even with Quebec Solidaire. She got, I think, 61 seats, if I remember correctly. She got 59. And the majority mark there was 63, meaning that's half the seats, and that's what you need to have complete utter power. Also, it's worth noting that she only won with 1% more popular vote than the Quebec Liberals. So even if she did get a majority with that, she would not have a mandate from the public to pursue a sovereigntist agenda when only 30-odd percent of the population of Quebec voted for her and her separatist agenda. So that, coupled with the fact, or that the popular vote was so close and that it's a minority government, means that she has no real power to advance the separatist agenda. So there's really nothing to worry about there. I was actually hoping for a Parti Québécois majority, primarily because I think they should pursue their own separatist agenda if they want. Every province should have the right to do that. And when you look at the way the funds transfer from Quebec is kind of, they take the most money from the rest of all the other provinces. We have something here called equalization, where all the other provinces, through taxpayers' money, send money to the government based on how much you earn, and then that goes to the what's called have-not provinces, and Quebec is a have-not province, and they take the most money out of this. And, you know, being somebody here who is from a province that actually cares about their economic situation, sending this money off to the government that then hands it off to Quebec to do whatever they want with it and mismanage their provincial economy, it just really annoys me. So I wish that there would be something changed by this. And maybe if she did get some of the powers, federal powers, transferred to Quebec, that would come with the caveat of loosening up equalization here, or maybe even transferring more powers to the rest of the provinces, which is something that would be nice to do, because I know here in Alberta we would like that as well. So,
So would you like Quebec?
She got 54 seats.
Okay.
That's the number. She got 54. Quebec Liberals got 50, so only four more. They were the incumbent government. The CAQ, which is a rightist Quebec-centered party, not really focused on separation, got 19 seats, and the Quebec Solidaire, which is a far-left socialist kind of extreme separation party, got 2 seats. So she has no mandate to do any of this stuff.
Would you like Quebec and all to Quebec to kind of split off from Canada and, like, screw you guys?
Well, I wouldn't mind if it happened, but I think for Quebec's own good, they need to think that they need the rest of Canada. It's not the other way around. So, I mean, like, it wouldn't faze me one way or another, but I think Quebec would realize they made a mistake after, and a lot of this could be fixed. The problems with Quebec could be fixed if they actually had decent representation provincially that targeted the interest they had without pursuing separation, because, I mean, less than one-third of people in Quebec want that, so, I mean, it's not resounding. But for me, the main thing is equalization and their money. So, I mean, that's why I was hoping for PQ in more than Quebec leaving. It's just maybe she could get some powers away, and in turn that would strip some equalization payments back. I don't think you guys have something similar to equalization in the U.S., do you?
Nah.
Where the rich states give to the poor states?
The only one I know of, which I think they've been changing, is mostly do with airlines. There was a little thing a couple years ago where you would have, you know, a full airport in a basically place that's basically out of nowhere. And the whole idea is that, well, it's just to generate income for that area because there's like absolutely nothing there, no job, period. And the whole point was that just give them some tax revenue from, you know, people paying airline fare and everything else. So basically you'll have people who, you know, fly from that place, fly somewhere, they'll be like the only person on the plane.
Yeah, that's not right.
So I think they've changed that. I don't know what they did with it. I haven't kept up with it for a couple of years. But, you know, just thinking, Shane, if you don't want Quebec anymore, you can always sell it to England. I'm sure they wouldn't mind getting some more land.
I don't know if they'd take it. Well, I don't know if you guys would take it either. They'd be another California.
Hey.
What do you mean?
No one cares for the French. Don't sell it to the French, though. They'll just make it even worse.
For those of you wondering, the CAC is Coalition Avenir Québec, which English translation to Coalition for Quebec's Future.
You know what? Sell it to Greece. I'm sure they can use the extra income.
You know, I resist making a combination or remark regarding Quebec and Greece, because that's not entirely true. I think Quebec's more like Italy in terms of the finances rather than Greece. So, I mean, just something needs to be done there.
I mean, Greece needed extra income, not Quebec.
Well, I mean, yeah, but Quebec would not generate the extra income.
Hey, tourists, man.
I think their main industry is like wood cutting or something like that.
Well, if they're French, it's probably mostly cigarettes cheap wine.
No. But the thing is, the only official bilingual province in Canada is New Brunswick. It's not even Quebec.
What language is over there?
Where?
New Brunswick.
English and French.
Okay.
But I mean, Quebec, the rural at Quebec and Quebec City is French. But if you go into Montreal, that is entirely English. That's why they call Montreal the Anglophone Island in Quebec.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the next one before we start running out of time. So will we ever have another live podcast?
I was actually thinking about this in pre-show. The deal is, in the future, that if we get more than 5 audio questions on any podcast, the next week's show will be a live show.
Okay.
That's what I will promise you. If you send in 5 audio questions, the week after will be a live show. And of course, we'll still reserve live for any kind of special events and stuff here, like Lord Pickles mentioned, like Combat Beta coming out or something like that. But yeah, if we get 5 audio questions, I will gladly make the show after that a live show.
All right. So you heard him. Give us some audio questions, make Shane happy, and you get a live show.
And, you know, another thing we could do with the live shows, I was experimenting with Mumble, is people can come into Mumble and we can grant talk privileges to certain people. So we could actually do live questions like that if people wanted to sign up and do that if we were doing a live show.
Okay.
So there's lots of possibilities. So, send in 5 audio questions from 5 different people and we get a live show the next week.
Okay, so let's move on to the next question, which is from Banzai99. So do you still want to read the first part since we already answered it anyway?
We answered the second part, not the first part. So just read the first part.
Oh, dear host, this week I have two questions. With the release of Jagex Account Guardian, do you think Jagex should have made it mandatory as opposed to opt-in? I can't see it being as effective as if it could be everyone was forced to use it.
I think not mandatory. I think opt-in is the way to go. Because with opt-in, you keep the options open for people. And quite frankly, I can imagine there are certain people, like the younger people playing RuneScape and the really older people playing RuneScape as well, that just don't want to go through the hoops of authorizing a new computer to add some security on. So, I mean, I think opt-in is perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm. You know, opt-in is basically the ones who have so much stuff in their bank that they just want to keep it extra protection. You're one...
Yep, that's me.
Mm-hmm. So if you want that extra... You know, it's like insurance, you know? You have to buy insurance to protect yourself. So you don't have to buy anything.
You need to buy insurance in the U.S. to protect your own health.
Mm.
You know, that is the one Democrat... platform that I do agree with, the healthcare system for people who can't afford it.
Actually, there are in San Francisco, they actually do have a program called Healthy People San Francisco. It's not completely free, but it's, you know, supposed to be basically dirt cheap depending on your income. And you know, people like me who is basically going back to college, every college basically has a mandatory opt-in where you have to pay for health care thing over there, so you get basic clinical services.
That's good, I guess.
But you know, it's funny is on my school's homepage, when I checked on the healthcare thing, you can actually opt out of it, and the reason being is that if you can opt out of this, if you believe that religion heals all wounds. Duke can attest to that because I showed him that picture a couple years ago. I was like, well, I told him, well, Duke, if you don't want to pay for universal health care, here you go. Just say God heals all wounds and you can opt out of paying it.
All right. Like, so I'm back to Jag. Yeah, we both say opt-in, I think.
I just don't care for it right now. I mean, I think my connection is pretty secure. I don't go anywhere that would jeopardize my RS account. And the only time I gotten hacked was a long, long time ago, and I think it might have been my stepbrother was looking for something and got something in.
At the time, you know, there was no... How long is your password?
How long was the password? It's classified.
Oh, okay.
I'll just say this. It's it's my level... level 3 password.
Only level 3.
Mm-hmm.
Mine's a level 10.
I have 5 levels of password. One is, you know, I don't care. This is like, you know, low-level forum stuff or just to log into it so I can get what I want. And all the way up to level 5, which is like, if I lose this one, I'm screwed.
Okay. And while we're on the topic of passwords, I'd recommend that people check out... LastPass if you want to have secure passwords, or if you're on OS X, you can use 1Password, which is what I use.
Okay. You know, the more
1Password also has a pretty nice iPhone application too.
And as you know, the more characters you have, the more secure your password is. So, you know, go for it.
Yeah, that's entirely true. Password security is based entirely on length and how comprehensive what's called the dictionary of your passwords are. So, for example, if you have a 10 to 12 character password, uppercase, lowercase, numbers, and symbols, that will be a pretty secure password. So there's not much to worry about with that. But if your password is 6 letters, just one dictionary word with maybe a couple numbers appended onto it, you're screwed. Even
or
from a
if you just
attack.
Or if you just have one called password.
Yeah.
Which that's supposed to be like one of the most, it's that and ABC 123 is supposed to be the most two commonly hacked passwords anyway.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. Thank you, Banzai. Last question from Flash. Dear host, what kind of weather do you guys like and why? I personally prefer days that are cool and mostly cloudy because I hate hot weather. And sunshine is pretty annoying when it blinds me. It also makes hot weather even feel worse. I don't like it when it's too cold, though, because it starts to feel uncomfortable. And I also don't like it completely cloudy because it looks pretty depressing and gloomy. What about you guys? It's from Flash.
So, basically, he's hoping for a light thunderstorm everywhere. He likes cool and cloudy, so there's basically no sun, and he doesn't like hot weather, so he's basically, he'll never get any natural vitamin D. He doesn't like super, super cold, which is basically snowing, so he's basically liking, you know, thunder weather. Just yeah. Without the rain. All right, Shane, you go first. Hot or cold?
Ideal for me is anywhere between 5 degrees and 20 degrees Celsius. So for your, you Americans listening, let's see, 5 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, it's about 60-ish.
41 degrees all the way up to 20 is roughly
60-ish.
68 degrees, yeah. So that's my preferred range. But of course, I don't mind the snow and I don't mind the cold weather here. So I'm fine with it. And you know, that being said, last year I think we got a day that made it down to minus 40.
Want to add anything else?
No, I just don't like hot.
Yeah, I don't mind warm weather. I think it's good to have some warm weather every once in a while. But you know, I prefer cooler weather. Cold. I mean, I can handle the cold pretty well. You know, not my family though, because they'll freeze to death. But I can handle the cold pretty well. And Shane can attest to that. I'm the only one that can take out my dog out at night because everyone else is too afraid of the cold. So, warm weather is good. I mean, beach weather is good. I mean, you know, right now is, even though in the U.S. it's technically starting to become fall, this is basically San Francisco's summer.
Really?
Where we basically have sunshine all the way till like end of October. Right now it's about 19 degrees C. So
okay.
67 degrees right now. And interesting, you know, the entire summer it was just cloudy and cold. You know, our summer is basically, it basically begins in August because we're on the coast.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually.
So,
from
you know,
a climate point of view.
So for us, August through October is basically a harvest season if we actually grew anything here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's move on to the next one.
Well, there's no next one. That's it for questions. So remember my challenge for audio questions and live shows.
5 audio questions, and we get a live show.
Yep.
Then you can jump on in and talk to Shane and me and whoever else is on that day.
Pretty much.
You should bring Grandpa Daniel back.
Well, he could send in a question and join for a live segment that way.
He'll probably post an auto question now telling me to stop calling him Grandpa.
Well, he's not a grandpa, so I don't think you should be calling him that. Okay, tech news. Kindle Fire updated. The Kindle Fire HD 7. So it's a smaller version of the original Kindle Fire HD 8.9 inch. This is a 1280 by 800 7-inch IPS display rather than the 1920 by 1200 display. It's essentially got a bit of a faster CPU in it, Wi-Fi, and the whole of the shebang. So a 7-inch Kindle Fire. What do you think? At $199.
I never really cared for the Kindle. It's not what I would get. But you
know, and that's the problem with the Kindle Fire. The reviews initially said it was a good tablet, but it was butchered by Android or Amazon's custom version of Android. If it was pure Android, now that would have been something to talk about. And that's where the Nexus 7 comes in.
When is that? Is that coming out soon? Can't remember.
I am not sure on the release date for the Nexus 7.
It's supposed to be somewhere in mid-October or something. Basically,
yeah.
Before Christmas.
So, I mean, I guess the Kindle Fire is marketed at people who want the Kindle name, because I assume everybody who knows what Android is would opt for the Nexus 7 instead, based on the way that everything worked in the past. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, the Nexus 7's already out, I think.
No, I haven't seen it at the store, though. That's the thing. Oh. I went to Best Buy and I saw...
It's on Google's Google Play place.
No, I just kept seeing Samsungs everywhere in Best Buy, and last time I went to Fry's, I didn't see it either, which I thought was weird. I just saw Galaxy S2.
Maybe it's not in the store. But
It's not for sale yet. As we're in the store, we'll get it. Not everyone's going to order
on
online.
The website.
Yeah, but not everybody likes shopping online like that.
I think that Amazon and Google here are being proactive because they know Apple will be releasing the supposed iPad mini for the holiday season this year, and they want to get the jump on the marketplace in price as well. I wonder if what this means for the price of the iPad mini when that comes out. Pay, this is $199. Would people pay $299 or $249 just because it's Apple, you think?
Yeah.
And, at that price, you can justify it, too, because it's the same price as, say, an iPod.
To be honest, I said about this a couple weeks ago when we first announced Nexus 7, is that I thought it was too cheap.
Yeah, well, that's the idea. They're trying to just...
I thought it was too cheap. I mean, they could easily put it like $250 to $300, and people would still probably buy it. Instead, they're just making it around $200, $250, which, okay. It's a decent price.
The 7-inch Kindle Fire HD is shipping actually next Friday, and then the bigger version will be shipped on October 25th. So, definitely trying to get ahead of the market here. But I know if somebody asked me, I'd just tell them to get a Nexus 7 if they didn't want an iPad. So it still is going to be a question to me as to who's actually going to buy these things. Probably just the people who know Kindle.
I have that much to say right now. I mean, I'm not a big fan of ebooks right now, so I just don't care too much of it.
Okay.
I still prefer, hard copy that you can just curl up into your bed and read.
Yeah, but the problem I have with hard books is they're so heavy and they're so hard to hold. They're awkward after reading on a tablet. So.
Well, that's what the library is for. You read it and you're done. Usually people just read it one time and never read it again. Unless.
Yeah. Okay. Next up, a bold prediction from Steve Ballmer. Predicts that 400 million Windows 8 Surface and Lumia devices will be sold. So he's already predicting that there will be 400 million Windows 8 phones and tablets running Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8, but of course he doesn't say by when.
Mm-hmm. So basically it could be from now to eternity.
We should see close to 400 million new devices running Windows, Lumia, and Surface. Those devices represent the single largest opportunity for software developers in the biggest community. Next app developer to hit it really, really big will do so on Windows.
Mm-hmm. So, we're basically having a giant tablet, cross connection thing going on. We have Apple with the iCloud. We have Google with what do they have right now? I can't remember.
Sync through your Google account, so everything is just just used,
Yeah, and we also have Windows was coming out with their own little cloud version. So basically, it's going to be like connecting you with everything you have.
And the problem with this is the ecosystems can't talk to each other.
Hmm.
So if you have a Windows tablet and an iPhone, it's kind of hard to get them to talk to each other. Or if you just, I don't know, that's a bit concerning. But, I think for the standard user out there, they just pick one and stick with it. Like I have my iOS ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. To each his own. So basically Microsoft has to figure out is how they're going to fight against Apple. I mean, they really basically want to get the people who still do not have a tablet and, a smartphone to jump onto the bandwagon with them or steal customers away.
They won't steal customers away. People who buy Apple will buy Apple. Apple has a pretty high brand loyalty. What they will do, as you said, is get people who know that they have Windows in their computer at home and might use that for their tablet. Another potential thing might be using Windows to get the business enterprise group into tablets as well, because everybody knows Windows, so why not just stick with what we know, right?
Okay.
So I just think it's a bold prediction, the fact it doesn't say when. And I mean, it's kind of a late market to be entering for Surface. It'll almost be 3 years by the time it actually comes out, just under 3 years, actually. So anyways, next up, a bizarre Facebook user survey, which turns into a political quiz. So apparently there's a survey making the rounds on Facebook. It's asked questions about how you use Facebook and how satisfied you are, which are, of course, natural questions. And then it heads off into things like, where do you get your news from? Facebook, Twitter, news websites, newspapers, TV stations like CNN, Fox, and MSNBC. Then demographics as well. And then it turns to politics. How people feel about Barack Obama, Mitt Romney, Republicans, and Democrats, and how they describe their own ideology from very conservative to very liberal. Then it goes into current events, and it asks, who is the current vice president? Choices being Joe Biden, Dick Cheney, Hillary Clinton, or John Boehner.
They should have put in a movie star. I bet people would pick that one anyway.
Yeah, they would. Next question asked about... which presidential candidate supports allowing illegal immigrants brought to the U.S. as children to remain in the country? Choices are both, neither, Romney or Obama. So, I mean, that's a bit of an absurd question. Then it goes into true and false and asks questions about the economy has shrunk 7% in the last 3 months. So, what could they be planning with this?
Well, first of all, is it directly from Facebook or is it from...
Yeah, it's run by Facebook. It's a link you get on Facebook. It's run by Marketing Land. But the link is by Facebook. It apparently appears on your page with the line, "We'd like to hear from you."
I don't use Facebook, so I really don't care for it.
I was thinking, could they be attempting to use the massive amount of data that they have and based on these determine how an election is going to go or something? Could they be trying to do that? Because that is 2 months away.
Well, all I gotta say is their Facebook stock is less than $20 a share. So unless they want to play some political game or something to do with Romney's tax information, they're not going to go anywhere. Yes, you heard about that one, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I did. You told me first.
Should I tell them? Tell the audience, or
no?
Let's just leave it.
Let's just leave it.
Okay, just Google Romney's tax form, and you'll find that really quick.
So, I think that's it for tech news.
Okay, so we're moving on now to skill of the month
for September, which is thieving.
So we have a huge, huge, huge gap right now.
Go ahead, describe it.
So we got, the Lion 777 had basically 2.7 million XP, and second place is Brian B at less than 1 million. So now I'm curious, what the heck has Lion been doing to get up that quick in a week?
Probably plunging pyramids.
And everyone else basically just went, just basically stole a cake from Ardonier and left.
Well, not entirely. There are seven people above 100,000 experience. So, I mean, there are probably a few people like Carpi and Bonzi here who did steal a cake or two. But this is a good time to remind everybody that you should keep competing, because it is September And we do run the Skill of the Year competition, which is whoever signs up for Skill of the Month and gains the most XP in these Skill of the Months in the entire year wins. So theoretically, you could come in second or third in all the Skill of the Months for the year and still win Skill of the Year.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, like last month, we had a little interesting second place winner, Riff, come from behind. And we had a couple that came from behind, too, as well, last couple months ago.
Yeah, that was good. I like it when that happens. So maybe Brian B or Flash here will pull something like that.
Okay.
So, we only got one achievement this week, and it was Bletherskite with 99 mining. So congratulations to you. 99 mining is something I've always wanted, but I don't have the determination to continue through it. Yeah. So, anyways, pick of the week time. I believe you have one for us.
Yeah. So, Shane, are you ready? Are you ready to drop a nuke somewhere?
Oh yeah, I've been playing with this.
Basically, there's a website called Nuke Map, and basically the whole point of the thing is you set off a nuke, whatever you want, and see what happens. So you can do your hometown, and you can actually pick what kind of weapon you want to use, from the smallest bomb to the World War II bombs, all the way to the largest.
David Crockett,
yeah. So anyway, you have a choice or type in your own from the smallest one, which is 6 kilotons, all the way to the Tsar Bomba, the largest USSR bomb design at 100 megatons. And so it uses a Google map, so you can basically pick anywhere you want and drop a bomb and see what would happen. So let's see, really quick, if I go into Quebec, let's see what happens. This stupid thing. Oh, no one cares for it. Detonate. And with the largest bomb, I basically made a nice giant hole in the center of Quebec. And it gives you a little everything. Have different color codes. You can see have the fireball radius, the radiation, air blast radius, and the thermal radiation that will occur. Oh, yes. And so, you know, if you want to see what would happen if we enter World War III, or in Shane's case, World War IV, you can try and see what would happen if a nuke dropped in the middle, right on top of your house. You'd be dead.
Yeah, it's safe to say that even with the Davy Crockett, it would destroy you and your entire neighborhood.
So, you know, if I drop the giant bomb in San Francisco, I basically can take out San Jose as well.
The Bomba thing?
Uh-huh, the largest one. I would basically just blow up. I would burn up San Jose.
Oh, there's two. Did you use the one largest one tested or the largest one designed?
Largest one designed.
Yeah, so you would. Yeah, that's enough to take out an entire city. And I don't know if they produced any of these.
Well, that's why it was designed, not created. I think for 100 megatons, that you need the only way you can fire it is basically from a ballistic missile. Because there's no way a plane could get to it, and by the time it gets there, probably it gets intercepted by everything
else. Well,
that
was the idea with Russian bombs, is they wanted to make the strongest bombs possible because they didn't have the precise instruments to deliver them on target. Whereas if you look at all the U.S. bombs, they're tiny compared to the Russian bomb. Like, Castle Bravo was the biggest U.S. bomb tested. But if you go to the largest bomb in the current nuclear arsenal, the 1.2 megatons B-83, that's still enough to take out a sizable portion of a city, which I assume the U.S. is still keeping a few of them around. And, you know, you want to keep a few of those around just in case you ever need to flatten a country or something like that.
Yeah, so, you know, what would happen? So, Shane, what would happen if we drop the biggest U.S. bomb right on, right in the middle of Iran's capital?
Well, if you did that, you would destroy that, and you might also start a world war in the region.
No, you say Saddam loyalists did it. Let them fight it out.
No, that's fear-mongering, like, if I ever heard any. Here's the largest French warhead, 300 kilotons. So, yeah, as you can see, nuclear weapons are still kind of around. And you see they got this option, don't log anonymous usage data. I wonder why they got that. I mean, it's not like somebody's going to get their hands on one of these, so, I mean...
Well, there was one little thing a while ago where, many, many years ago, where undercover officers were, you know, suspecting of trying to figure out about this little, you know, Russian mafia thing going on, and they were trying to sell some mini nukes, but, you know, they got caught, but, you know, it was like many, 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 many years ago, and just like, it was one of those cop shows type of thing.
Okay.
So, it's probably no real reason to worry about it, because the odds of you getting... Listen, you know, the odds of you getting the materials to even start making a nuke, you would probably kill yourself from radiation.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
But then again, if you really wanted to make a nuke, all you really have to do is just gather like 300 fire alarms and put them all together and see what would happen.
What?
Well, actually, 300 is probably too small. You need like a couple thousand.
I don't get what fire alarms has to do with it. But...
Fire alarms have... actually produce gamma radiation. That's how they actually detect fire alarms.
Oh, okay.
So basically, in every single fire alarm, there is some a tiny little bit of radioactivity that is used to detect fire, detect smoke, and warn you, and do all that, you know, loud ringing stuff. So you can literally, if you really wanted to, gather a couple thousand of them, all put them all, find a way to put them all together, and you actually make yourself a small nuclear bomb.
You know, there was a show a while back I was watching on National Geographic about nuclear proliferation. This reminded me of it, but it was interesting. It showed how it went from the U.S. to the Russians and then practically everyone now. So
mm-hmm.
It's a good watch. I'll try to remember it. But anyways, that was a rather interesting pick and kind of long. But let's go into say what have we been up to? Whoa.
Nothing
happened. Everyone okay over there? Okay.
Yeah, we're fine. Just the kitchen. When do you go first?
All right. This week, on RuneScape primarily. What did I do this week on RuneScape? Not that much. I just checked out the God Wars dungeon. I did some farming. And we discovered that, unfortunately, you can't share Geyser Titans.
Told you.
Yeah. So not much on RS.
Yeah, I didn't do that much on RS too. I was making my glories. I did the circus and I messed around with a little bit of farming because I needed the rock. I needed the rocks anyway. So all I really did was grow the herbs, and I have the farmer pendant. So I was trying to use that one up. Other than that, I was just been heading to school, trying to get myself better and. Going on to Guild Wars 2.
All right, then. Well, that being said, we'll see you next week. And everybody remember that if we get 5 audio questions next week, the show after that will be a live show. So if you want to send those in, just email them to questions@rsbnb.com or leave a voicemail on Skype or phone them into the Google Voice number, which is 571-572-2632, or better remembered as 571-57B&B. See you next week, everyone.
Bye bye. And also remember, StarCraft II: Heart of the Swarm beta is out.